To get started, Boker Tov, Tzoraim Tov, Er Tov, depending where you are, 24 hours around the world. Everybody, welcome. It's a pleasure to see everybody as we conclude our mini series with Dr. Zev Elif and Making Passover American from an American historian. I just read his article last night at 1 a.m. in Tablet about baseball, about Ryan Terrell trying to have it both ways. I don't know that I totally agree with your analysis, but we'll talk about it another time. Talked about playing basketball on Shabbos, but not being a Mechalosh. And that was in Tablet magazine. That's what I was doing at 1 a.m. in the morning last night. Anyways, but today he'll talk about the four children and how that's being used by, I guess, American rabbis from ancient times, American climes. And I want to thank you in advance since I won't be here at the end of this year. So thank you for your series. And Bakasha, okay, it's all yours.
Thank you, Rabbi Kelman. Thank you to all of you. I see so many names that have reappeared three times over. I'm really grateful for these conversations, which have helped me deepen my own understanding. Each one of our conversations has had a little bit of a different motif, right? Passover oil, kidney oat was really historical and looking at some very, at least to me, interesting, intriguing sources, but very traditional history. And then last week we looked at sermons. Whoever thought that drushes could be so interesting? Perhaps when you actually align them chronologically, you'll understand how filinry changes and actually has a prototype. And today I want to look at the four sons. Rabbi Kelman and I were just kibitzing before we started about how it actually, I'll say it again because I do believe it, is that there's probably no other section of the Haggadah in which Jews, whoever participates in the Passover Seder, are really able to fulfill the mandate of the Mishnah, the whole Dor V'Dor, and every generation, Chayiv Adam Lirot, writes the Mishnah. Interesting, Rambam writes Laharaot, not just to see, but to reactualize. The same Chiddush was offered by both Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik and Professor Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, interestingly enough. There is no greater section of the Haggadah in which we are able to place ourselves into the narrative. And I think that's because at times we are the Rasha, we are the Chacham, we are the Sheino Yodei Lishaul, and sometimes we're a Tam. And yet the Haggadah offers four discrete templates of how people react to the mitzvah, the commandment of Sipur Yetzia Mitzrayim, of retelling the story of the Exodus from Egypt. And I want to take a look at some of those proof texts. I'm actually going to start with the Talmudical sources and show just how much it has changed. And then, interestingly enough, in modern times, how the four sons have been represented for the purpose of a historical cause, one or another. So just so that we can make sure that we're all on the same footing, let's take a look. Let's read through it. It's just a short section, so you'll indulge me. Chacham Mahu Omer. The Chacham, what does he say? Mai du bachukim mashpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu, which should be etchem. What are these testimonies? What are all these mitzvot that we're doing? It's a rather abrasive question altogether, but it's received nicely by the parents. Va'af ata amor lo kilchot haPesach, and you should instruct that child about the laws of Passover, and ein matir and achar haPesach afikomen, which conclude that you cannot eat after the afikomen. Remember these proof texts, because we're going to review them throughout. Rasha mahu omer, the wicked son, what does he say? Wicked child. Ma'avodah hazot lachem. What is this stuff? What is this worship, this avodah that you do? But he says it, lachem. And he says it with a particular intonation. Lachem. Lola. He says, you all. He's excluding himself. Lefi shehotziat atzmo min haklal, because he has removed himself from the narrative of Sipur Yetzia Mitzrayim. Kafar be'ikr. He has somehow made himself out to be a heretic, at least for the Passover night. And there's no room for remedying the situation one bit. You have to knock him in the teeth. Tell him the story. Make him witness. that he, that God, how God saved all the Jewish people who are representative of everybody but him. Leave alone me, says the storyteller, and not that Russia. Iluhay Hashem, if he were there, lo hayad nigaal, referring to the Midrash, I suspect that 4/5 of the Jew, of the Israelites not actually leave Egypt, he would not been part of those who were saved. Tamahu, Omer Mazot. What is this? He doesn't have the vocabulary. He lacks the lexicon to be able to ask an appropriate question more than just Mazot, Bamartai, love. So you give him a pithy response to a pithy question. Bechosek Yad, with great strength, we were once slaves, and now because of God's hand, we are free. And then finally, She'ena Yudei Lishol, the one who doesn't even know how to say mazot, the one who cannot ask, af, at, tachlo, you anticipate the question you offer, Shne'emar, v'gadata levincha b'yom ahule, more, you give him the fundamental that we were taught that on this night, on Passover Eve, we have to teach everybody, the child, any child, this is what God did for on our behalf in Egypt. So those are the proof texts. But were they always the proof texts? So this is one of the original sources. We're going to look at there is no text in the Bavli, the traditional Babylonian Talmud. That's the one when people refer to the Gemara, they're usually referring to the Bavli and the Sefer otherwise. There is a Midrashic compilation called the Mechilta de Rabbi Yishmael. There are a few Mechiltas, in fact. And then there's also the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud. I want to take a look, though, at the Mechilta and the Yerushalmi. The Mechilta most closely follows the Baal Haggadah, our text, our canonical text of the Haggadah. But there are some interesting differences that I want to highlight. Number one, Nimseid Omer Abra Banim Heim, a little bit different, syntactically a little bit off, but still pretty much on the mark. Echad Cham ve'Echad Rasha ve'Echad Tam ve'Echad Shemir Shol, right? Pretty standard stuff. Chacham Mahu Omer, Mahi Du V'Chukim Hashvatim Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Otanu. So he is using Otanu and not Etchem, right? Which, to my mind, anticipates what? The Rasha's comment. This is a device in the Mechilta that exists to separate the question offered by the Chacham, the wise son, versus the Rasha son. Here we've offered a different version to make it stand out even more pronounced what the Rasha is about to ask. Other than that, it's pretty much the same text, although there is one other. Yes, a Talmudic source. Good to be correct, and not a Talmudical. Talmudical is having to do with people who Talmudical Academy. Thank you for that. Ma'idud ba'chukim, referring to the question, the proof text that is assigned to the Chacham, Rabbi Elazar, Omer, Minayna to Omer, Shim Haita Chabura, Shel Chachamim. Oh, shall Talmidim shetzrichim lasok beochod haPesach ad chatzot v'chana amar ma haidut v'gomer. The Blazer says, from where is it derived that a group of scholars or students must engage in the laws of Passover to midnight? That is why the Torah states what is meant by these testimonies in referring. But chabura are the what in the Mishnah and the Gemara and Pesachim, a chabura, a cluster, a cohort, was the group of people who were tied to a particular Karban Pesach. And so there was an assignment of Talmud Torah along with offering, at least in temple times, the Karban Pesach. This version is most aligned with our Haggadah, very different than the Yerushalmi. Let's take a look at the Yerushalmi. Just move this Zoom tool a little bit so I can read it. Tani Rabbi Chia connected Arba Banim Dibra Torah, Ben Chacham, Ben Rasha, Ben Tipesh. Not simple minded, just dumb or stupid or something. Tipesh. Ben Sheinei Velishol. Ben Chacham, Mahu Omer, Mahi Dubachu Kimashpati, Masher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Otanu. Okay, so that Otanu adopts the same position as the Mechota. Avata Morlo. But here, what do you tell him? Bechosek Yadotzianu Hashem Mitzrayim Beit Avadim. Who is that That is not the response that we have in the Haggadah, is it? Which one is that? That's the time, right? Yeah. So you switched it. Ben Rasha Mahu Omer, Mahavuda Azul Lachem, Ma Toreach Hazeh Shatem Matrichem Aleinu B'choshan. What are you guys doing? So it's more elaborate. It's more vituperative, perhaps. But it's essentially the same. It's a different question, actually. What are you doing? Mikivan Shotzi Et Atzmo Min HaKal, Ata Apata Amolo, Bavor Zeh Hashem, Asa Hashem Li Asa Otanim Ahayish Lo Asa. This guy, this is not what God did it for. So it's a different language, but the punchline is the same. Ilu Haya Otanu Ha'ish Bin Mitzrayim, this fellow. It's interesting. Ha'ish, right? He is separate from the family. So there's no language about Kafar B'Ikar, but in the reference to this Russia, he has been outed, literally, outed from the family. Lo Haya Roy Ligael Misham Lo'olam. He would never have been redeemed from Egypt. Okay, but I don't know if anybody wants to say something different, but it seems to me that that is, even though different language, still the gist of the Russia. Okay. In Tipesh, Ma Omer, what does he say? Ma Zot. Okay. That's on point so far. Af et lam. Lamdu Hilchot Pesach Shema Tirnet Pesach Akomen Shelo Yehei Omei B'Chabura Zu B'Nichnas L'Chabura Acheret. More reference, only very similar to Rabbi Lezer's comment about Chabura, that we don't want him to escape to another one. We want to capture him. We want to captivate him. And Ben Yudei Shlishol At Petach Lo Tefila. You have to anticipate without any explanation at all. Let me open it up. We haven't had much discussion. Why the difference? Does the narrative change? Particularly, you know, there are several differences, but the most marquee of all of the differing aspects is the flip of the Chacham in the top. They are not the same child. They are not portrayed very similarly at all. But what is changed in the messaging? In the Passover Haggadah, you teach the Chacham the laws. And in the Passover Haggadah for the Tam, we teach the Tam the basics, the foundational work that we redeemed from Egypt. And according to the Yerushalmi, for the Chacham, we teach the fundamentals. And for the Tam, because we're afraid he's going to depart, he's going to leave to a different Chabura, he's going to run away from home, we offer the laws of Passover. Why should that be? What are the implications? Cannot know why. What are the implications of that switch?
The communities that there were around them at that period,
can you say more?
It depends who they were targeting. The young people that were sitting in the cellars, what was the social economical situation of them and what they're really trying to target.
So they are reflecting the needs of two different communities.
Yes.
So the and in fact, that is the legacy of the Haggadah, isn't it? That's why there's such a market.
That's the idea.
Right. That's why there's such a market for so many Haggadahs. Year in, year out, we need new formulations. We need new strategies and materials to engage family members.
Yeah.
Interesting. So they are...
Chanoch lana'ar
lefidarko. Exactly right. But the Baal Haggadah, our version of the Haggadah does not date back as early as these sources.
He took a different line, different approach.
He took a different approach, and he flips, though, the Tam and the Chacham, which is interesting. I mean, the fact, you're right. You're right, absolutely. Anyone else? Okay, so let's look more at some of the relevant sources.
Actually, excuse me. Sorry. I can't get my camera to work. Right.
Okay.
That's very unusual. But anyway... What you said about Chacham, and you said that that was a bit of an abrasive question coming from Chacham. To me, it's more not wise, but a wise guy. And if he's a Chacham, why is he asking this question to begin with?
Well, we have to ask, right? The Rambam writes in Hilchot Chametz Tumatzah in the last section so I think somebody just asked, I believe that Jay had posted the link, but maybe if somebody didn't, I'll post them again. Just give me a moment.
There in the chat.
I think if somebody came.
I can post it again.
Thank you, Rabbi Kalman. I don't know if I love what you said about wise guy. I'll use it with your permission in my Haggadah, in my Seder. It's very fascinating. Of course, the idiom was lost in Hebrew, but it's a really interesting point. He asks because we have a commandment to ask. And even if there's one person, even if you're dining by yourself, you have to have a facsimile of a dialogue. You should ask and answer your own questions. And so he is rehearsing part of the narrative of the Haggadah should be in a dialectical, should be in a question and answer, in a conversation.
Okay.
So he is doing that, even though he is perfectly capable of doing it. And what's interesting about the response, and so let's hold that question and just maybe arm ourselves with some more sources.
Okay. Thank you.
No, thank you. It's great. Wise guy. I love it. Rashi gives us a clue. And the school of Rashi gives us a number of clues of how, because of the Haggadah that we have, our earliest version is much, much later than these other sources. It's probably in the 12th or 13th centuries. Mazot, on the pasuk of Mazot, Zetinok Tipesh, interesting. A tinok tipesh. So normally that's assumed to have been the tinok she'eno yodei lishol, but a tipesh nirushalmi is that time. So it's a little bit confused. She'eno yodei lahamik she'otel, but then it is clear that it is the she'eno yodei lishol. V'sote mishal mazot. But he doesn't ask that. He doesn't know what to ask. So it's a little bit confused about which one Rashi's referring to, or if he's coalescing the Tam and the She'ina Yudei Elishol. Makom Acher Hu Omer Ma'ah Yidubach Mishpatim Hare Zot She'elat Ben HaChacham. And he's referring us to, and this is in his Bible, in his Chumash commentary, is this from Rashi. Dibur Torah Keneged Arba Banim. So, Vishol Der Chach. So Rashi's introducing us in an interesting way to all four sons and to various strands of proof text associated with each. And then in the Talmidim of Rashi, the students, Avram Grossman recently published in English for the first time, probably about 3 or 4 years. Hard with COVID, everything feels like it was 10 years ago. But the great historian and biographer of Rashi is Avram Grossman at Hebrew University. And there's a wonderful book now translated into English, I believe, by Littman on Rashi. And there's a wonderful section on the school of Rashi. That many people took up. Rashi didn't live that long. He lived from 1040 to 1105. He accomplished much in 65 years. His students were responsible for curating much of Rashi's wisdom and research. Kinegad Arba Banim Dibra Torah. We have the Sidur of Rashi's students, and Midalad Mekoro Taktuvim Beparsha Midal Mekomot. Each one is assigned. Each son is assigned with one of four proof texts. Bukulana talamad shlo dibratara ela keneged arba banim. And there isn't any mix up. There are four for four. Chacha ma hu omer b'seder v'ed chanan k'tiv ki shalcham bincha machar lemor ma ha'idud b'achukim mashpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu etchem hare bincha chacham amor shiudel deber lishol b'lashon nechona. He can ask appropriately, correctly. He doesn't say etchem. The haktiv Hashem Elokeinu. Ma etchem? What does it mean etchem? That's the Russia. You. Kilomar atem. Yitziatem Mitzrayim. Shaya hadavar leicha. B'chein achacham. So much. Let's make sure that we get to all the sources. We have a lot to do today. Rashi is seizing on the chacham, as a halacha guy, so to speak. Kalomar, in the last section, Lamanu Ochlin Achagiga Kodem Pesach. He wants to know all the intricacies of temple style Judaism, where there was a Karban Chagiga. That why do we have the Karban Chagiga, for example, which was why we call it a chag? Why do we call a holiday a chag? Because it was offered offered a Karban Chagiga. Today, chag, modern Hebrew, refers to holiday. So that's why some people say chag Purim Sameach or chag Yom HaAtzmaut, because chag has taken on something more than just a karban. But when it refers, the original version of chag was associated with offering a particular festival sacrifice, the Karban Chagiga. So Rashi is doubling down on the chacham being an anti-Russia. Makes sense. He's pivoted a chacham into Russia. They're diametrically opposed to one another. So you have the Otanu versus Etchem. And he also makes clear that in his version is like our Haggadah, that the chacham is associated with questions pertaining to the intricacies of the halacha, whether the halacha back when there was a Beit HaMikdash, when there was a temple in Jerusalem, or when we have to state today of all the different rules and regulations of operating the Passover Seder. The Machzor Vitri, on the other hand, which is another source associated with Rashi's students, offers another layer of understanding. The Torah is teaching us about four discrete sons, Achacha, Mahu, Omer. We'll just read the bolded section. Get to the bolded section. Seder ve'etchanan k'tiv katuv ki shalcha bincha machar le'mor ma'ha'idu b'chukim mashpatim asher tziva Hashem alokinu etchem. Very similar to our Haggadah with mild differences. Harei b'ben chacham hakatu midavar shiodea l'daber l'shol b'lashon chachma. He's asking not from a lashon nechona, he's asking from a lashon chachma, from being wise. There's something wise, there's something about the way that he is asking, that he is suggesting, which is imploring his parents to speak to him in a certain way. So all of this is rehearsed by Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman of the late 19th, early 20th century. The rector was called, of the Hildesheimer Yeshiva. He was one of the original students there, and then a faculty member, the heir to Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, the teacher of the Sfid Eish, a pivotal figure. And I think a lot of his writings were in German, and much of it has been translated into Hebrew and English. Was a remarkable personality. I think there was just Bar Ilan just had a conference on all the different contributions and historical intricacies of Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman. So he has a wonderful essay, and I've just given you a section of it. It's basically his thesis. Acharei Korban HaMikdash, Kasher Lo Haya Od Kol Pesach. So he's offering very similar to that historical but anthropological approach, is that we learn from the four sons, suggests Rabbi Hoffman, that everything is up for reconsideration. How we respond to each of the four children has everything to do with how they are asking the question and how we are receiving their question. The intonation, the suggestion based on their mannerisms are all important. And sometimes that requires of us to answer the flip, to answer the sons very differently. So suggests Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Acharei Chorban HaMikdash, Kasher Lo Haya Od Kol Pesach, when there was no longer afterwards, when at the reflection temple, where we didn't offer a karban Pesach, as makom leheshiv zevach Pesachu hayitzrichu mishanein hilchot haPesach, it became imperative that we teach the laws of Pesach to him. Why? Because, to borrow from Professor Chaim Soloveitchik's essay, in some ways my peanut oil is a response. That's how I position it if you read closely the footnotes. But I do consider the Rupture and Reconstruction, that is a 1994 essay, to be very, very good. It has an answer to changes in Orthodox Judaism in America. Not all the answers I feel very strongly about, but there is something about it that after one transforms from a one culture to another. The case of Dr. Soloveitchik, it was migration. Some people misunderstand that it's about Holocaust. In his new book, in his reduction of it, he makes clear that it has nothing to do with a post-Holocaust Orthodox behavior. It has everything to do with migration. When you transform a culture, you sometimes need to work very, very diligently to impart that older culture so that it can have legs, it can have a foothold in the new emerging culture. And so suggests Rabbi David Tzvi Hoffman, Hayitzrichim l'shanein hilchot ha-pesach. We need to teach l'shanein hilchot ha-pesach. We need to teach it because all of a sudden the Seder is going to look different. Instead of eating a carbon Pesach, we're going to have a little piece of matzah. Instead of having a korech being a Hillel sandwich, it's going to be something that is very different than the sandwich that Hillel had had so many thousands of years ago. Kain lo yachlu od lishaal ma'avodah hazo. He's not really asking about the avodah, about the performance in the temple in the Migdash. Acharei ki lo hayta od kol ha'avodah, because there was no real service any longer. So the transformation, it was needed to tell him about the walls. He's asking a question before we have designated that child to be the custodian, the caretaker of our tradition. And so there isn't any time to waste. We don't tell them about the story. You need to be the next leader of a new generation, of an emerging generation of Jewish people. And so we actually flip. We flip the curriculum. The Tam and the Chacham, this is what suggests Rabbi David Tzvi Hoffman, there was no need to teach the Chacham about the laws and regulations of the Passover Seder because he did it every single year. Why do it? It's not new to him, but each year now in a post-temple style Judaism, we need to change. This doesn't answer the question about intonation and the Rosh Hashanah Chacham, but I think that's also very apparent, is that we want to soften the difference between the Chacham and the Rosh Hashanah. When it was Otanu for the Chacham, when we are using a literary device to differentiate between the collective, the Chacham, he is bringing himself into the fold versus the Rasha, who is drawing himself out of it. In a temple existing Judaism, style of Judaism, we are afforded the opportunity to create discrete sons and say these people are in, these people are out. But there's much at stake in a post-temple Judaism, and so we want to soften the question and to make sure that, you know, the Rasha and the Chacham aren't that far apart. And nevertheless, what we're going to look at in the subsequent slides is how, despite this message, which I think is more than just Drash, I think it's Pshat, that the producers of Haggadot, particularly in the 20th century in America, have utilized these four types of sons to demonstrate, to make certain observations about the contemporary Jewish scene. So let's take a look at a few of them. So this is actually the exception that proves the rule. This is the Zim HaGadah, the four sons. What do you notice about the artwork over here? It's actually the exception that proves the rule for Haggadot. But it's from Budapest in 19, actually, think about, there are two of them. There's the Zim HaGadah, with the four sons. So let me be clear. They were blocking, so I couldn't see, so clearly. You have two Haggadot here. You have a Tel Aviv Haggadah from 1952 on the left, which is quite interesting, and it still is the exception that proves the rule. Then you have a Haggadah from Budapest, the Hungarian Haggadah from 1924. Any observations of what the artwork suggests in these Haggadot? I can't see. I want to make sure that we can all see it. So please, happy for you to call out.
The one on the right, the picture in the upper left, it looks, first of all, it almost looks like a woman, but it looks like somebody who's deep in thought. So I'm assuming that's the Chacham. Mm-hmm. The one next to it on the right kind of looks like a smart aleck.
He does. He's the wise guy.
Yeah. And the two below, so I guess the the bottom left is the Tom because he has his mouth open, so at least he's saying something. And the other one must be the Onel Enol Yodei Lishol because his mouth is closed. He's not.
He's like Atat Patachla. We have to actually open his mouth. At least the Tom has his mouth. That's a good observation that the art is responding to the preparation of each son. Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah, I think you're on the mark there about the Budapest Haggadah.
Yeah. Can I say something about that? Hello?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, please.
So in the Budapest Haggadah, there's really no indication that these people are necessarily Jewish. Nobody has. Nobody's wearing a kippah or anything. But in the other side, on the Tel Aviv, the little figures are all drawn, dressed as, you know, from Jewish people. The guy who's sitting at the table, he's learning. You can see, he looks like, you know, he's, and the other, they all look like.
Yeah.
They you are see that, like, so the, you know, Chacham, from the yeshiva world. Whereas
and you can see that the Chacham is an old man in this case, right? There are only four characters on the left side, and the Chacham and the Rasha look to be in conversation with one another. And it looks as if the Tom and the She'ena Ve'elishol with his toy there are also in muted conversation, inaudible conversation, which is really interesting. The Rasha is this heavyset fellow with a dog on a leash, but the dog looks quite ferocious. Anything else on these are fascinating texts. What's also interesting is how the artwork is displayed. It's in the Tel Aviv version. It's in the text. It's unavoidable. In the Hungarian, the Budapest Haggadah, it's off to the side.
The Hungarian one looks like very contemporary pictures for the time. Vis-a-vis the right hand corner, the whatever that bow is for the little boy.
Right. I think you're right. I mean, they're both very stylish, but there is a different motif for both. And what's interesting, yeah, go ahead.
And the Tel Aviv Haggadah looks like they're meant to be somewhat interacting with the Baal Seder or whatever you want to call it. The father figure.
Is he the father figure or is he the Chacham?
Ah, well, that's to be determined. If you want to say he's the Chacham, that's also probably correct.
Well, where is the, if he is the father, which is actually how I first, each time I look at this, I always assume that he is the Baal Haggadah. He is the father figure. But in this case, unless the She'ena Ve'elishol is also absent, right? We can assume the guy on the right is the Russian. There's no question about it, to my mind. And the little boy on the left is She'ena Ve'elishol. It's also generationally, right? Is that the Chacham is an older gentleman. The Rasha is middle-aged. There is a certain gentleness that I see in the Tom, in which he has a beard, but he's a younger man. And the She'ena Ve'elishol is clearly a boy. And so you have four different, perhaps, generations, or at least different tiers of a life cycle in the same image.
But if you're assuming that the Tel Aviv one, if we want to assume that the Tel Aviv one has some Zionist leanings, which is not necessarily apparent, the fourth son might be the one who stayed behind in Europe and got, unfortunately, burnt up.
Oh, my goodness. And that's not intuitive, but who knows?
Yeah.
Ruth, go ahead. Last comment, then we'll go to the next
one. I don't see any Zionist bent in the Zim Haggadah. It just looks like it's very European. It's the old-fashioned Haredi, the Meir Sha'arim, picture. But not the Zionist Kippah Seruga or like in 1952. We don't have Sabras, four Sabras there. We have four Europeans.
If you're not speaking, if you could mute. One second. I think I have such powers. Good. In fact, Daniel Boyarin makes this observation in an interesting book, which is that in what's changing in among Zionist Haggadahs is that the Chacham is no longer the long-fingered scribe. He's no longer the traditional rabbinic masculine figure, but he has become the warrior. He has become the agent of Tzaha. And so that's how the Zionist Haggadahs are changing the presentation of the Chacham. So this is very much though produced in Tel Aviv, is modernizing a certain template from a European presentation of the Arba Banim, of the four sons. I don't want to curtail this. Anybody else want to offer? It's fascinating just to look at, just take, we don't, often we run through it, at least in my experience, in my home. We don't have time to review the Haggadah. We're all very, very hungry or looking to make sure that our children are assuaged with their matzo balls.
Rabbi, this is the difference between the Yerushalmi and the Tanhuma.
How do you mean?
It means if you look two different time zones and two different cultures, definitely you're going to get different markets.
Yes, no, absolutely.
That's exactly what you see illustrated. It's exactly what it should be.
Very good. I like, okay, so with that, good. You anticipated exactly. Let's look. Let's go to Forest Hill, Queens, the Forest Hill Jewish Center, and look at their presentation of the four sons in the early 1940s. Who is the Chacham? Can't make this stuff up. As for the wise son, to him belongs the world of the future. He fights the current battle as an American and as a Jew. He knows what he is fighting for in both instances. He does not enjoy the fight, but he knows that in fighting for freedom and democracy, he is fighting for life itself. He is a modern Moses, who, by the way, is not anywhere in the Haggadah, daring all to lead the world out of its wilderness of ignorant hate and mistrust. He knows his time, his earthly goods, his very life itself may have to be used to accomplish the goal of freedom, and yet he is willing. He has learned that only in the freedom of all people, Jews, Chinese, Negroes, Indians, can there be assurance of freedom for any people. He's G.I. Joe. He has learned that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance and abounding faith. He has learned the Passover lesson. Is that not a product of the moment? In the 1940s in America. The wicked son, on the other hand, right? He's not wearing an army hat, a helmet. The wicked son is difficult to talk to or to influence. If he has been forced into the present conflict, he goes about his duties unconvinced. He sees no good coming out of the sacrifice and the, he's not just an iconoclast. He's hardly American. He's Charles Lindbergh. He's in part of the America First coalition. He sees no good coming out of this. And please understand, I say that smiling, but that's what's inside of this text. Lindbergh, who was the most famous American in the world, next to FDR, created a us and them mentality among American Jews. You didn't need Philip Roth book to teach you that. He sees no good coming out of all the sacrifice and the toil. He has no pride in being a Jew and sees no future in it. He's not supporting the war, so he doesn't have a Jewish identity. The slander against us, he is ready to believe, and he can even partially justify the crimes committed against us. He believes that in being less of a Jew, he becomes more of an American, whereas in reality, in relinquishing his religious ties, he becomes a less worthy citizen of this church-going republic. To be religious is to be American. This is part of what colleagues of mine call the tri-faith America. It's what Will Herberg made millions of dollars in a long form essay, a book basically, entitled Protestant Catholic Jew. There were these melting pots in the 1940s and 1950s, and you couldn't be an appropriate American if you weren't a faithful American, thereby convincing, though the demographics didn't shape that way, didn't suggest it, that Judaism was one third of American faith. If you didn't have a portal of entry of faith, you couldn't be a good American. And this heretic this atheist, this Russia, who is against the war, who is against Judaism, who thinks that he's American, well, he has something coming. He's none of anything of the above. The images themselves are just absolutely terrific. So here you have a Tom, and he has this cigar in hand. He's got this little cap. The simple or indifferent son does not deliberately sabotage the cause for which his brothers are fighting, but at the same time, he does not throw himself with any enthusiasm or conviction into the fight. Being an indifferent Jew, he is slow to realize the danger to himself as well as to his fellow Jews when rabble-rousers malign the members of his faith, when the world looks on in indifference while his people are exterminated, and when solemn promises to restore Palestine. So here's your Zionism coming into the fore, and it's wrapping in all of the different global politics that American Jewry is facing in that moment. To the Jews are casually broken. So this is not an affront to the United States, but to England. It is his informed brother's duty to rouse the indifferent son to a positive, alert attitude. So now it's not the father, the parent, it's the Chacham who is responsible. By repeating to him at Passover time the story of Pharaoh, he has to be reminded of his allegiances. He has to be freed of his agnosticism, of his indifference. We freed ourselves from bondage and made ourselves into a self-respecting people. So these, here, it's a very live issue. It's identifying these social constructs, these four types of American Jews and how they react to World War II. And these days, a universal trial is, it is fitting, especially during the Passover season, to turn to the history of our people for wisdom and guidance when the whole Jewish people is enduring the ordeal of fire. The parable of the four sons made significant for our day can be a source of strength and inspiration now to the uninformed son of Israel. In this day and age is a problem to the rest of Israel. He who has not even a close enough tie to his heritage to be able to seek information about it is a maladjusted individual and a menace to the rest of us. So he's somebody who can't be redeemed. He's in conversation with the Russia. Therefore, so we have to disabuse him. We have to try, but he is very different than the Tom. Take a look at the last couple of lines where the cursor is. The uninformed son of Israel may be self-conscious, self-hating, troubled man, and Passover is the time to remind him of his glorious past and his equally promising future, which is bound up so intimately with the success of the United Nations cause. Anybody want to react to this interpretation?
It's very Zionist. I mean, it's wrapping the whole business of the four sons and you know everything that's going on in the UN at that time.
And they just to scroll back just to remind us of the images. And you have all the slides available on the website. They're just terrifically dressed up and very useful for that period and for this politics terms, right? Here you have the Russia with his chiseled look and his thin glasses. Over here, he looks like a, talk about villain, he looks like a smart aleck villain, somebody who's too smart for his own good. The Tom and the Russia, the Tom, you know, he's got these, his physical features aren't very sharp, but he's able to be shapen, he's able to be made to good use. And the She'une Deli Shol has sharp features. He could either be the Russia or the Chacham, and it's our duty to transform him in one way or another. Now let's take a look at a very interesting Dvar Torah. I have two more sources. This is from a book called Off the Derech. Again, I'm not interested in whether or not the book to discuss the merits or the demerits of the book. But I want to take a look at a quote in it. And then I will look at what I think is its most original source, which comes from a very interesting place. The process is reflected in an interpretation of the four sons of the Passover Haggadah. What is that process? One interpretation views these sons not as individual children, but as generations. And you already see this in that Tel Aviv Haggadah, possibly, is the four sons representing four different stages of life. So this isn't the first time we've seen this, just in our conversation today. The first generation is wise, so to speak. He is committed to halachic Judaism. So the first migration to America the Eastern European Jew. And now, of course, this is an overgeneralization. The second rebels and moves away. Third generation is simple, confused between the parent who does not observe and the grandparents who do. The fourth generation is so far removed, it does not even know how to ask a question, right? This is an interpretation of the Haggadah that knows about the Look magazine issue in 1964, the vanishing American Jew that has been scared by the specter of intermarriage and assimilation. And the fifth son, his generation is no longer at the Passover Seder at all. He is totally assimilated. Anything about this source? It's also using the four sons, five sons, as a template to understand the modern moment for its own cause.
I've seen this in a reverse version where after the generation successfully assimilate, the fifth son is the one who asks questions about the ways of his ancestors and begins to reinstate the traditions.
Right. So there is another version that's told. If anybody has a source, I'd love to see it, but who flips it, because with this multi-generational four children does not anticipate the Baal Tshuva movement, of course.
I don't recall the original name exactly, but there's a beautiful comic book Haggadah that has a version of that.
Fascinating. So the earliest version of this, as far as I can tell, is told over by Rabbi Riskin in his Haggadah from 1983 in a conversation that he relays. A teaching from the sixth Lubavitch Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe. And I've never seen this. I've asked every Chabad scholar I've come across with. Dude, the first thing I say, you always tell when somebody is Chabad, have you ever seen this in writing? I want to be able to teach this from the original source. But Rabbi Riskin relays, and it's probably a very accurate version, the wise child represents the European roots, the generation of the grandparents who came to America with beard and earlocks, dressed in shtreimel and kapata, steeped in piety with a love for learning and profound knowledge of the Jewish tradition. Their progeny, the wicked child, brought up with the American melting pot, rejected his parents' customs and ways of thought. Skipping down to the bolded section, the next paragraph, the third generation, the simple child, is confused. He watched his grandfather making kiddush on Friday night and his father standing by silently. So there's something about, they both play off of the anger between the rabbinic immigrant Orthodox Jew who was steeped in his traditions and the son who was probably sent to Stuyvesant school in Lower East Side, Manhattan. And has become wicked because he has Americanism becomes an agent of rishus in this interpretation. He watched his grandfather making kiddush on Friday night and his father standing by silently, perhaps resentfully, impatient to prepare for business on Saturday morning. The memory of the grandfather, though strong at one time, is fading. And so the confused simple child can only ask mazot. He has echoes. Caught as he is in the conflict between his grandfather and his father. The fourth generation, the child who does not know how to ask. And of course, Rabbi Riskin and the Friedrich Rebbe were both deeply invested in Hebrew. Offspring of the simple child is the greatest tragedy of all. He was born after his great grandparents had died. He knows only his totally assimilated grandfather, the Russia, and his religiously confused father. He does not even know how to ask questions. This is our mute American generation of the 1980s, the generation of the child who thought it was someone's birthday when she saw her great-grandmother lighting the festival candles. The only time the child has seen candles being lit was on birthdays. She did not even know how to ask. We are now being challenged to open our great heritage to this generation, which lost it without ever knowing what it had possessed. Any thoughts on this interpretation? Whether it's historically accurate or not is beside the point. What I'm interested in is how the four sons are being used for a particular purpose. Remember, they are following the dictum of the Mishnah, Chayav Adam Liro D'Atzmo, right? They are infusing their personal or communal narrative within the Haggadah.
They are telling the story of America specifically. And, you know, it's like a Chaim Potek book.
The duality is very much like a Chaim Potok. This is very, very exactly right. In fact, Chaim Potok's archetypes in every one of his books is a very similar strategy as the Four Sons. He is seizing on certain discrete types, even if he himself, of course, would have admitted that he is simplifying for the purpose of the narrative itself. But that's why it's so compelling. Yeah.
You can connect.
It seems to connect. Be like a polemic against mid-century America.
Yeah, I don't think they would have seen it. You're right. In our view of it, it is, especially in the context where I'm a historian, we're coming here with a certain, all with a certain scholarly mind. There is a polemic. I see them as looking to achieve salvation for people. Certainly that Russia, right? That first generation American Jew who likely went to Stuyvesant, then City College, and has moved away into the suburbs. They have no truck for that person, for that generation. Of course, that generation is the generation that gave us Yeshiva College, for instance, that gave us Mizrahi, that gave us OU in its fuller bloom. Not discounting the success of Orthodox Judaism at that time, that generation gets a short trip, yeah.
You can connect the fourth generation here with the wise son of the clippings that you had. Because I view the wise son of the clippings as a Western Jew, which means you see things through Western eyes first rather than religious eyes, which means if you want me to be religious and to observe these things, tell me why. Show me the beauty of it, which is reflected here with the fourth generation. It's, you know, there's something called push-pull theory. The negative theory, well, there's anti-Semites, and if they're going to beat us up because we're Jewish, we may as well be Jewish. But it doesn't show you the beauty. And when Judaism is voluntary, when you don't have to become Christian, but you can become atheist and nothing, and that's okay, then show me the beauty of it, which is a problem that predates the Americans. That's the whole emphasis of the Hasidic movement, that they rebelled against the staid learning that didn't speak to them, and they wanted the joy of Judaism, and that's what reflected on them. And it was also a simpler form of Judaism, which we try and do today as well. So this is a problem that predates the Americans going back to the Hasidic movement. But it also is, you know, when you can't force me, when you don't have a martial law to tell me to close on the Sabbath, and you want, and it's a choice between going to the mall and going to shul, give me a positive reason for going to shul.
Right. And each one of these interpretations has fidelity to the actual text or the basic framework of the text, but tries to make meaning. Really, all of this, although, you know, we might take issue or umbrage even with some of these versions, maybe even this one in particular, what's interesting is how that the Haggadah is such a wonderful text because it helps us make meaning out of Sipur Yetzim Mitzrayim about Seder night. And the Four Sons, maybe more than any other source, allows us to inject ourselves into it. So take a look at this article, which was produced in the 1970s, a point of turmoil in the relationship between America and Israel. March 1975, the United Nations, and later on that year, was going to vote that Zionism was tantamount to racism. It was already pretty much a fait accompli. There was already resolutions passed in that moment. This is after many people had soured on Israel, Jews and otherwise, but mostly otherwise, on Israel because of the Yom Kippur War 2 years prior to that. And much of the majesty over the Six-Day War and the triumphalism had waned. Take a look at this editorial in the Jewish Week in 1975. The wise son in the Haggadah is a person who possesses an open mind and great natural intelligence, but is wholly uninformed about the significance. Just make sure if you turn down your volume, please. Fortunately, the solution suggested in the Haggadah, "Do thou inform him," is proving to be efficacious. The Jewish intellectuals who have visited Israel, the Jewish scientists attending congresses at the Weizmann Institute of Science, Jewish professors lecturing in Israel universities, people who have been brought into the fold of Zionism and the operations of the state, Jewish medical specialists demonstrating at the Hadassah Hospital, our musical virtuosi concertizing before Israeli audience have all come away Jewishly inspired and transformed. The lingering Jewish spark within their soul, long dormant, is beginning to glow again with ever-increasing intensity. In this interpretation, the Chacham doesn't know how to ask the question. He or she is a Chacham in a different field, but is asking questions relevant to their Jewishness, which is a really interesting thing, which is really unique, if you think about it, just in terms of innovative in terms of the interpretation. The wicked son in the Haggadah, and this is referring to the part of Reform Judaism, the minority at this point, the very small minority that is anti-Zionist. The wicked son in the Haggadah is pictured as a person who is skeptical, cynical, and resistant to the ideal of national redemption. His modern counterpart should be recognized instantly as the American Council for Judaism, whose psychopathology has been diagnosed as a complex self of self-hate. You don't get these editorials anymore. The simple son, as portrayed in the third paragraph in the Haggadah, is neither cynical nor hostile, but merely uninformed. His modern counterparts are unsophisticated Jewish masses whose workday chores leave them no time or energy for involvement in any of the conflicting isms. But, this is the important section, be it said to their credit that their simplicity is coupled with common sense and unerring intuition, so that when Israel is in need of material and moral support, they respond with enthusiasm and generosity. One too young to inquire obviously refers to a child. For a son of this age, the author of the Gutta urged that his father, or elders, or mother, take the initiative as joining the Torah, and thou shalt tell thy son. How this should be done was demonstrated by Baron Edmund de Rothschild, who will go down in Jewish history as an Nediv HaYoduhu, philanthropist, who fathered and supported the first Jewish settlements and industries in Palestine. So we need to work on these people. We need philanthropy to support them and to resurrect the energy of the Shein Ned Yishol. Anybody want to react to the Zionist interpretation of it? And then we'll close it out. It's been so much fun learning with all of you.
Oh, yeah. So the Tom yeah. Now has become the Chacham.
Yes.
He's like,
and it's returned, right? The Yerushalmi's version of it.
Right. He's the Peshut Jew who has a lot of emuna and a lot of faithfulness. He's a Jew at heart. He's down to earth and he's always there. And he's got enough knowledge. He's not uninformed and he's not stupid. And the Chacham is not a Jewish Chacham. He's just a non-Jewish Chacham.
He's a Chacham in a secular way, but we're conducting intervention, as is Israel is doing at this moment, because they are fearful that the UN and so many intellectuals are departing from the Zionist fold. So we need to recruit them into Israel's leading intellectual institutions. Exactly right.
The Thomas is the Balabais.
Good intuition, with good sensibilities, and he's supporting. He has his blue and white pushka every Friday night. Right. So this is maybe his most creative interpretation, but what they all are doing, and we're out of time. I wanted to make sure that we covered everything.
I would like to see the next interpretation of those four after COVID.
I just report the news. You got to give me 20 years and then I'll share it with you.
No, because after COVID, you're going to have different people and a different reaction and different need.
You'll have a truther. You'll have somebody who's wearing four masks, and you'll have somebody
no masks.
It reflects a different time than today, the 75 version, because for one thing, Israel has evolved enormously economically. I'm Canadian, and I know that today Israel has more companies listed on the NASDAQ in absolute numbers than Canada, which the difference of population is 8 million versus about 38 million. So when that person responds to Israel's needs in 75, wonderful. You know what they used to say about the Rockefellers? The Rockefellers may have problems, but money isn't one of them. And it also says nothing about local communities and their needs.
I love it. Right. Well, we do see, what is the common thread that unites all of these interesting texts, even the variant versions of these Talmudic sources, which is the capacity of the Haggadah generation after generation to engineer meaning making. I love that phrase very much. It's very much in vogue in the Harvard Divinity School. A lot of different of their internal publications express this language, meaning making. There is no text that helps us make meaning like the Haggadah. And there maybe is no section that quite matches, registers at that high level of creativity as does those four Arba Banim, right? These four sons, these four children. And if anything, please use these slides. Nothing more. I would print them out, use them, because what they do is they share with us our ability to grapple with our contemporary times in our traditional sources. And that really, to me, is what is so heroic and so majestic about our faith. I can't thank you enough. This has been so phenomenal to learn with you for a couple of hours, for an hour of the last couple of weeks. And wish you all a Chag Kasher v'Sameach, however you choose to make meaning out of Pesach and Leil HaSeder. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Chag Kasher v'Sameach. Bye-bye.
Thank you.